You're listening to the Ward Weekly Podcast with our host, Walter Latham, and our co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. Voices in Society Impacting the Culture.
Hello all, and thank you for joining another episode of the Walt Weekly Live Podcast. I am your host, Walter Latham, and I'm joined by your co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. I can't believe that another week has passed and it was without incident. We were holding up production meetings because we did not know what was going to happen on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, everything panned out the way I didn't think it would, but we're very happy that settled for now. Mm-hmm. This only goes to show you that crazy people, they got sense. They know if they don't have the numbers, they get very, very humble. I heard that one Capitol, they only had one guy standing outside. But with like all enemies, you know, you got to be vigilant. Anyway, let's get on with today's show. Who is accountable for violence in our community? And the TWW's position is, we are. Black-on-black violence with images of shooting, kids being caught in the crossfire, other incidents, innocents killed or wounded. What can we attribute the scourge to? We have gangs, drug dealers, people that prey on the old and the elderly. Well, what do we do? Do we depend on the police to implement programs to address it? They have. We have, yet it continues unabated. Let's put the responsibility where it lies. We are responsible first and foremost, meaning the community. A child is a product of his or her environment. If he is brought up in an environment where life is cheap and going to school is for punks, this is his reality, his day-to-day reality. This, along with systemic racism, has manifested itself with kids who don't respect life. It's not precious. Life is not precious to these people. I didn't mean to say these people, our kids. Have you ever asked yourself how a kid can kill someone and then go right to McDonald's and have a Big Mac? How a mother can grieve for a murdered child, not knowing that her child killed another child 2 weeks ago? We have to change the paradigm. This is what this show is going to be about. Michelle?
All right. Thank you, Walter. And good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Walt Weekly, Voices in the Community. I hope everyone had a great week celebrating Martin Luther King and also celebrating our new administration. So this week's sponsor is Black-owned women businesses, Beauty Blends by Ami, and Soap and Love. And also, new sponsor, Michelle Sweeney here, with her new vitamin E oil that is on sale. I will post all of the hashtags and social medias and websites in the chat room. And also, we want to introduce a returning panel, Harper Milo, an NYPD, New York NYPD, and he's joining us today in today's topics in reference to violence in the Black community. Officer Harper is assigned to the Brooklyn North Outreach Unit. The Brooklyn resident said, making a difference in the lives of people is a daily effort. We're going to let him introduce himself shortly, but I want to finish introducing the rest of the panel. We also have Greg Coleman out of North Carolina, CEO of Illumination Media and Technology. We have Christopher Sweeney out of New Jersey. He's a retired New York sanitation worker and CEO of Johnny Roots Catering. We also have, that will be joining us shortly, Ernest J. Robinson out of Washington, D.C. He's a sergeant in the U.S. Marine Corps, combat veteran, senior consultant, at Be Earnest Leadership and Professional Consultant. We have in our audience another panel member. She might join in later, or she might just listen. Monique Lauderdale of New York City. She's a retired New York City Housing Authority property manager.
Monique is in. I'm sorry, Michelle. Monique is in.
Awesome. Awesome. Former director of Raising Grace Scholarship Fund and also a community theater actress. Welcome, everybody. We appreciate you taking the time out on your Friday evening to join us. I will post everyone's information in the chat room. Walter, please give our sponsors and our guest panel some love. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, everybody in the audience.
Yeah, thank you guys for joining.
All right. We have preliminary questions. You know, this is going to be an open forum. So Walter's going to go over our questions and really focused on Harper, and our panel will join in as well.
Okay. All right, thanks. I want to thank the panel for joining. We're not waiting for Ernest, but he should come in. If not, he doesn't. All right. Every day when you turn on the news, one of the first things we hear is someone got shot. Sometimes, and it is too much, our kids are killed or wounded in the crossfire. Small kids, babies. So what are your feelings when you see and hear about these things? I'm going to direct that to Harp.
Well, first and foremost, I want to thank the Walt Weekly for inviting me again, all the other guest panelists, the audience. Thank you again for this wonderful platform. What do I attribute and what do I think and what do I feel? I'm going to be honest. If I can be honest, I'm tired. I feel numb. I feel frustrated. There's times that I'm indifferent. I can't even lie. I can be indifferent at times too. You know, just trying to maintain, you know, my own family and what's going on with my own children. But when I do turn the news on and I hear this day in, day out, every morning, every evening, every afternoon, it's just this cycle, and it becomes so cliche. You know, what can I say differently that I haven't said last year,
right?
2 years ago, 5 years ago? What can any of us say different? So it just, my feeling is just frustration and just emotionally tired of it all.
Yeah, and from your purview as a NYPD officer, I mean, is there anything in addition to that? Because, you know, we look to y'all guys to reduce these type of things. Are your hands being tied? Well, you know, I want to put it to you or pose it to you in the right way, because I understand that, you know, you're active. You're NYPD. So is there any way that, you know, there is a way, I mean, some of the things that you do for the community and things like that, that y'all guys have identified that this has been a record-breaking year, or last year was a record-breaking year in terms of the number of shootings? It goes back more than 14 years since we had that number. You know, how is it, you know, how are y'all guys handling that? Are you taking some type of steps, or is COVID tying everything down because of budgetary purposes?
Well, I'll say this, and I think we had touched a little bit on this discussion on the previous show. As far as defunding the police and if that had any effect on policing in the community currently during the summertime, you know, during the fall, and now that we're in the winter, you know, and I said it then and I'll say it now, you know, people said defund the police, people protested and they made a lot of noise at that time.
Yeah, they pulled it
and didn't know what was going on behind the scene. So, the only thing that was changed that I believe did have some type of effect on the rise in shootings was the way they conducted stop and frisk. So we had officers out there that were moving incorrectly as it related to stop and frisk, which put an ugly a light on something that it was a good tool that they used in the beginning.
Right.
So we also, I mean, I have a presentation that I present to young people about how they should conduct themselves when stopped by the police. And it also goes into what police can do and what they cannot do when they stop you. And so, yes, there was a lot of instances where the police were wrong. And so when they took that away completely, me personally, as just a community member, as a father, as a citizen of this city, I saw personally the direct effect of that, where, you know, people said, well, this ain't firecrackers no more. This summer was one of the worst summers when it comes to came to gun violence that we had in recent years. And I think that was a direct effect of it. I don't think the fund the police movement, I don't think people really truly understand what that meant and how that worked out, because a lot of the funding that, you know, they were saying take away from the police, right now, currently, to this day, they still have that funding.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't think, I didn't see anything in terms of defund, actual budget item, where they reducing, there was a reduction in funding. I don't think there should be a reduction in funding. That is my position. If anything, they should increase it. All right, to mirror what's going on. But anyway, let me go to Monique. I haven't heard from Monique in a while. Monique, can you have any comments?
Yes.
On that?
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Monique.
Yeah, can you all hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Welcome, sis. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we all mute when we're not talking. That's probably why they took a little bit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Happy New Year. I think that part of the problem with defund the police is branding. It should be reformation or police reform, right, and not defund, because people don't quite understand what that means. And when everyone hears it, if you're on the left, the right, the middle, or whatever, when they think of defunding, they confuse that with disbanding. So I think a lot of it has to do with branding, and we should rebrand that, and it should have always been police reform. I mean, we've been fighting for police reformation for years. Mm-hmm. So that's my thought on that particular subject.
All right, okay, thank you, and I agree with you. I mean, the branding was bad, was poor.
Park just said his unit was disbanded.
I'm sorry,
mm-hmm.
Park. He just said his unit was disbanded.
And that's a community reach out program that he's associated with, yeah. Right, Hawk?
Yeah. Yes, a community outreach unit.
Outreach, yeah. Yeah, you see, I mean, that. But anyway, let me move on to Chris, and then we're going to revisit that. Mark, I'll let you tell us a little bit about that, how it's impacting you. But Chris?
Good evening.
Good evening.
How you doing? Hi, everybody. It's very frustrating for me to see how comfortable we are living in this chaotic mess. You know, I sent you a couple of, I sent you one article, but I was reading a few.
Right.
And, you know, right after the inauguration, you know, in Philadelphia, there were 12 shootings that night. 4 people died, were killed. And it's like a normal, like, it's like you putting on your shirt to go to work. It's no big deal. It's crazy. Like, we cannot be comfortable with this. And we have to be as outraged with what's taking place in our communities as we are with what the last administration was, what we're frustrated with policing, with COVID. This is a pandemic just like COVID, you know, if we look at it that way. I mean, our babies are dying every single day, and we are so comfortable with it. Something has to give. And I think the first real step, like everything else in this country, we really need to have a discussion about guns in this country. We are just too comfortable with the gun violence and gun ownership. It's too laxed. It's too easy to get, you know, it's not monitored properly. The messaging is all wrong around defund the police. Everybody, you know, oh, they want to get rid of cops. No, we don't want to get rid of cops. We want to get rid of bad actors in our communities. And we want police to be a part of the community. Those things, you know, we can walk and chew gum at the same time, you know. And the problem is people do not want to be honest with what their kids are doing out there. They don't want to say anything, and they don't want to be accountable for it. And that's a problem. Reading those articles and seeing what's going on across the country with gun violence in our community is really disgusting.
All right, but this has been going on for a while, Chris.
It has. All right. It's ratcheting up though. It's getting worse.
But who do you think the owners, I mean the responsibility lies with? Do you think it lies with the society in general or the government?
It's a societal problem. It's a problem for all of us.
But who should address it? Who's accountable? I mean, I always like to talk about accountability. I mean, that's something that I've learned, that accountability or responsibility is a key word here. Those are the two key words. Who's responsible?
We are all responsible. This is a society we live in. Everybody is responsible. And that's the problem, I think, because it only happens in certain neighborhoods. We tend to think it's not our problem. That's the same thing we thought with what went on with this last administration. And look what happened with the insurrection. You think it's not going to swell and bubble. It's going to spread. It's not going to stay in one place.
Right. You're right. You're right, Chris. And I can give you an example of that. I come from a small town in eastern North Carolina, which y'all guys know, right? And a couple thousand people. All right. And it's one of those neighborhoods you grow up in, there being maybe a murder every 10 years. All right, but it has changed. You know, drug dealing. You know, you get people killed one or two every week in North Carolina, in Williamston. Now that's where I'm from, Williamston. Mm-hmm. So, a guy was telling me, he went down there to visit. So he was driving around. You know how you drive around your old neighborhood where you went to high school, and all this kind of stuff. And he drove up into a neighborhood, and he had someone approach his car with a gun. And said, why are you in this neighborhood? It's a little small town.
Wow.
That's not a city. You know, I mean, it was incomprehensible to me when he told me that. He had to tell the guy, said, look, I grew up here, so I was just looking. The guy said, well, you leave and don't come back.
Right.
So it's everywhere.
Yes, everywhere. I think, you know, due to COVID, the crime numbers has quadrupled because they released a lot of inmates out early parole or whatever, you know, because of COVID numbers. You know, you have your gang violence, you have drugs, domestic violence, you name it. You know, they just had an incident in the Bronx with a man chasing a woman for domestic abuse with a knife. Mm-hmm. And then he charged after the police and they killed him. This just happened yesterday. So, you know, last year, I know someone, you know, it was a distant relative on family side. There was a guy that was released from prison in January for murder. Murder. Came out, murdered somebody two people, pregnant woman and a guy, 5 months later. So you have a lot of people that were released from prison. They're criminals. Why would you release someone that's a murderer, a felon? You know, if it's a misdemeanor, something minor, I can see that. But you're releasing criminals back into the community. And once the lockdown was over, crime went skyrocketing. I mean, crime was always there. But due to COVID, the numbers are just out there. So, you know, what do we think about that? How do you see how that's been going? You know, as far as the justice system is concerned with releasing prisoners and the numbers that are going up?
That's a great question. It's funny because when they first started here in the city, you know, as it related to raise the age, you know, and I know we're going to talk about that a little bit in brief, you know, in a few minutes. But, you know, once I started seeing some of the reform that was coming, you know, I looked at a partner that I was working with at the time and I said, I think we're going to go back to the 80s. I think this city is going to be like the OK Corral because of some of the reform I was seeing. Now, whether I agreed with it or disagreed, just the premise of it and what it represented as far as who would get out, what was considered technicalities, you know, mm-hmm. things of that nature, and how they would go about it to appease certain, you know, institutions that fight for the rights of the wrongfully accused or people who have been in the system unjustly, whether they committed a crime or not. But just to appease those organizations and not bring them to the table and say, all right, how can we meet in the middle? I think that was really damning, and we're going to see the direct effects of that currently and in the next year to 2 years.
Well, I thought initially that early release program applied only to people with nonviolent crimes. They were, you know, they were yet to go to court.
Right.
And so they were released for supposedly they were nonviolent. That was right. The criteria, the threshold that they had to meet. So you're telling me that didn't happen? It just applied it to criminals? I mean, you know, people that were violent?
I know for a fact.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It applied to just about anyone who had the right organization behind them, a good lawyer. I'll give you a good example. Kodak Black, young rapper from Chicago.
Yeah, heard him. Yeah.
He was released. He was pardoned by the former president. And just today, you know, they released a statement saying that he still has another case that he has to be tried on, which was a sex assault with a minor. Mm. So even though he was pardoned for this gun charge that he had, he still has a case. So, you know, is he a violent criminal? He hasn't been convicted of anything yet outside of what he was pardoned for, but he has a serious case coming up, having sex with a minor, a teenager under the age of 16.
Yeah, so,
mm-hmm. But he was released. So, you know.
Okay. All right. Now I'm going to turn this. I want to ask Greg. No, Ernest. Ernest, you in? Ernest, this question is for you, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the term black on black crime?
I don't really believe that. It's a convenient term. I believe there's crime, and I believe that there's a situation where a proximity, a geography, a geographical location will have the propensity to being able to calculate or have more crime with a particular demographic. So I don't necessarily mm-hmm. believe in it. But it occurs. I guess one way to categorize something, but I don't believe that it's any more prevalent, any worse, or any better than any other crime that happens from one person to another. I think sometimes we get caught up in terminology and trying to categorize something then versus just being able to address some of the cause and effect of what that behavior or why that behavior even began.
Exactly. I think it's just an easy way, just another way of categorizing, African-Americans.
African-Americans.
Yeah, it's another way. I mean, if you live in a bad neighborhood, I don't care where you go in the world, you go into mm-hmm. a bad neighborhood, you got high crime rates.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's not necessarily, I don't necessarily think that the neighborhood is bad. Again, the neighborhood gets categorized as bad. There are socioeconomical, disparities. There's educational disparities. There's, workforce disparities. There's food insecurities. There's a number of things that plague that particular area. Now that has a number of issues as it pertains to policies that have been written, gerrymandering that has taken over a number of years, because again that then has the implications as into who is going to represent you and how many representation that you may have as it pertains to Congress, and then who represents you on the state and local levels and within your city council, etc. So, and then that's how you develop food deserts, and it's how you develop. I mean, so there's a number of those issues that, again, so even having a bad neighborhood just becomes something that demonizes an area that has a systemic issue that may be attached to it that caused And that's the effect of it.
Okay. All right. Greg, have I been to you yet?
Hey, how's it going? Not yet. I'll take a stab at it.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I mean, of course I agree with Ernest because I think a lot of it is, you know, categorical. I mean, there's areas down here in North Carolina. As a matter of fact, right, one thing comes to mind right off the top of my head. A small city right outside of Charlotte is Gastonia. And Gastonia has been categorized lately as socioeconomically, it's almost mixed, whether it's, you know, blacks, whites, and the crime rate is still high, you know, so you don't conveniently categorize the white on white crime. It's a fact that the lower income levels have the high crime, you know, statistics, and that same type of crime is going on amongst, you know, people of the same color. You got black on white crime in that same area. So I think, you know, black on black crime it sounds catchy, you know, just like defund the police sounds catchy. We get caught up on catchphrases and we fall in love with that. The media falls in love with it. So they stick it to us and we hold on to it and take it and run with it. But right. we got to look at these things a lot, you know, a lot deeper than that. It's not just, you know, black on black crime. It's, you know, crime in certain, you know, economic areas. There's a lot more to it than just the skin color that creates these areas of crime. Now, at the same time, I'm not saying we don't have a problem in our community of lashing out at each other. You know, it that's something we have to take care of. But, you know, we need to term it a little different and be a little more specific about the, you know, all the things contributing than just saying it's a black on black thing.
I agree. It's too broad based. You know, you're grouping people, you're rolling everybody up, and you're classifying everybody. Hart, you know, from your perspective, do you agree with that term, black on black crime? I mean, how do y'all guys look at it?
Definitely not. Like I said in the comment, you know, Big Swing, he taught us, you know, and I think the brother that answered first, I think Ernest, you know, if I lived in a predominantly white neighborhood, you know, and I went outside and got into it with a neighbor and took his life, what would they call that? Would they call it black on white crime? White on black crime?
And murder. Just murder.
Just murder.
Generic. Yeah,
it's murder. Murder.
But if I stay in my neighbor in Bed-Stuy, well, I can't say that too much more, right, Swing? But right. if I'm in Brownsville, then it's black on black crime, and then it's a problem. That's a problem. We're killing each other. We don't care about ourselves, and we don't care about our brothers and sisters. And we're savages, and we're animals. But if I go just a couple of rows across, it ain't about how much of a savage I am. I'm a murderer.
Right.
It ain't no black on black crime at this point. So no, I don't believe in that at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, to Harper's point, if a black person in a neighborhood kills a white person, then that's how that neighborhood becomes a bad neighborhood. And that label then keeps individuals out. It's also one of the things that also becomes a catalyst for increased surveillance and tactics by police. It becomes a part of the briefings that they get in the mornings. When they do roll call, they start identifying certain areas and certain players, and then they start paying attention to more of the things that are happening. And it depreciates the value in there. And then that plays a part into how monies are getting transported over there. It's the canceling or the reassessing of support. I mean, it's all of those things. And so to his point, it's not considered black on white crime, but what it becomes a bad neighborhood, and therefore you shouldn't go there. And then start, you know, doing things like, you know, raising the rent on some people. So where you never can get ahead. But then they also then depreciate the value. They depreciate the value while raising the rent, and then taking money out of schools and or closing those schools and or programs because of it being a bad neighborhood.
Okay.
Right. That's true.
All right. Chris, did you chime in on this?
I want to say one thing that we can do as a community that doesn't cost much, you know, cost nothing. We have to discuss the trauma that's going on in our community with each other. We have to talk about it. Like, you know, these things take place and we don't even have conversations about it. You know, we talk on a podcast, but, you know, and you have a splattering of people getting on, you know, highly intelligent people that get on television and they speak about this. But we have real trauma going on in our communities. We don't have anybody to talk to. It's we hide it in shame. We don't discuss it with each other. You know, we have mental illness. We have so much, you know, we are a fractured people, and it's understandable that we should have this kind of trauma with everything that's going on with us. It's not something that we need to hide anymore. We have to start talking about this stuff in a real way, talking to our children. Hey, this is what's happening here. You know, you shouldn't have to talk to them when they got to show up to a funeral for their 14-year-old friend. That's not the time to have that conversation. It's before that happens.
How do we address a child that's one of five from, and all his brothers are from different mothers, different fathers? One guy got five kids by five different baby mamas. A lot of that is attributed. You can attribute to the breakdown of the family unit. I know we spoke about this back in July. I went back and I saw the episode that we did. I mean, how do we address that situation? Because I think that's a lot of it had to do with that. The broken home.
That's a great question, but it requires more than just a conversation. Because we're talking about issues that you probably saw when you grew up. They just exacerbated, you know, over the course of time. It takes being able to have some of those programs that some of us grew up on, either, you know, Boys and Girls Club, YMCAs, outreach programs. But it also calls for having a secure social services programs that allow for people to being able to receive help, but then also foster an environment where they can then get the support that they need to either go back to school or pick up a trade. They need to make sure that we reinforce our educational systems and to make sure that individuals are there. We need to make sure that, again, things like that Chris brought up about mental health, that it's not something that, you know, people are picked on, you know, while they're in school or while they're working, so that way they can get the medication and or treatment that they need. And so that people don't feel embarrassed by going, you know, reaching out. So there's a number of things that has to take place and nearly simultaneously. The only thing about it becomes so overwhelming to think about all the little nuanced things that take place and how those things have the propensity to being able to cause, you know, further damage to our communities as well as to the individuals themselves, that we oftentimes it only becomes just talk. And it becomes one of those things that gets passed on to the very next generation. And then the only thing that happens is that we get older and we talk about the things that used to be and how bad things are in today than they were yesterday. And it becomes a recurring cycle. And that's the part that really has to stop. So having these conversations are definitely important, and having individuals that are the police officers, that are city officials and or organizers in communities are great. But until we actually bring those things together and then start doing the hard work and the heart work, only going to be conversation.
I agree. I mean, that was direct. That was a shot right through the heart, because nobody's going to help us outside the community. I mean, you may get some leverage here or there. You talk about representatives and this and that, but when they go, it's all mine. What am I going to get out of this deal? Okay, so I am yet to see a representative go and make substantive changes to the neighborhoods that they came from. All right? I think, and this is my belief, all right, that we because we're going to lose a generation. The X generation is gone. Okay. We're going to lose a generation. Okay. I think that what we need to do is, one, return stop and frisk. And I was talking to Michelle about this. Return stop and frisk. Everybody gets frisked. Black, white, Latinx, doesn't matter. You look strange. Your pants hanging down. You frisk them. I mean, even though the pants hanging down could be, you know, identity or could be a form of discrimination, but I don't give a damn. All right, people are dying. That's more important to me. Okay, we have to nip it in the bud. That's always been one of my phrases I tell my kids. If there's a problem, nip it right then. That means that from the time that baby is born into this world, we have to change the environment because these kids are a product of their environment. And I always tell my kids that you are a product of your environment, but yet and still, if things change, you have to have the ability to adapt to what's on the ground in front of you. Okay? So we have to go to the crib and change the hearts and minds there. We have to groom them from that point because we have a lost generation, my friend. We have a lost generation. And it's not going to change. It's nothing you can do about that. It's going to continue.
But the notion behind the premise of that the way that stop and frisk has been implemented can itself be problematic. And by itself alone does not necessarily, you know, achieve the overall goal.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that's the only tool that can really
Right?
That's just one example.
It is right. But what I'm saying is that but my putting it out there. I mean, we're going to have one thing about doing a podcast is these things continue and people can listen to them at any particular point in time.
Right.
The way that stop and frisk has in many cases has been perverted and it has been largely disproportionate used against, you know, people of color. And granted, we have the discussions about whether or not is there black on black crime. And we talked about the difference between bad neighborhoods. And obviously, yes, in those cases where those issues are pervasive, like socioeconomical disadvantaged areas or where food deserts or where there's something that's depleted, there may be higher levels of crime. But then, and therefore, then the stop and frisk becomes a tool that's used in a perverse way. And so it's one of those things that we have to. So when we're talking about police reform, that becomes another thing. So it's one of those things that we can't just leave as a standalone. And I know that you didn't intend for it, but when it's made as a statement and it stands by itself, that becomes something that people can latch on and sit there and say, well, hey, that's the reason why we need to bring it back and we need to use it in this particular way. That's all I'm saying.
I understand. I appreciate what you're saying. Okay. You know, diverse views is good in a situation like this. Okay. But I only use stop and frisk. If you're going to stop and frisk as a way to get guns off the street, then it should not be based on the color of your skin. Okay. I agree. But that's one step forward to reducing crime. Let me call Harp in because Harp, and you may have some statistics or you may know of some, when the stop and frisk was in place versus it's not in place now.
Well, I don't have specific numbers, but what I will say is the problem that came from stop and frisk was you saw a disproportionate amount of Black and Latinos being arrested, stopped, frisked. And it didn't just stop at being stopped and frisked with some. Some was getting busted upside the head as a result to stop and frisk. So that was the issue. And it was like, okay, are we just doing this in predominantly minority neighborhoods, or is this done across the whole city? And the answer was, and is to this day, no, it wasn't done across the city. And why wasn't it done across the city? Like the brother said earlier, when you have crime, high crime areas, that's where they send the resources. So you got these guys that come into the precinct, you know, after 8 p.m. to start their tour, and their job, they're almost like hunters. And this is primarily what they're doing. They're looking for guns, they're looking for drugs, and they're not going to Times Square, they're not going to Prospect Heights, they're going to Brownsville, they're going to Harlem, they're going to Bushwick. And the people there are the ones that are affected by this.
Right.
Okay. All right.
And my problem with stop and frisk also is when you send a group of people out there with the intention of finding guns on the street, they have a quota to meet now, because now it's not just something you want to do to save people. It's a program now, and programs need numbers, right? Am I wrong, Harp?
You are 100% correct, but I'll tell you this: next to that, it's about the individual officer. Because I can tell you an officer who, you know, we teased him. We called him the Mahoney of NYPD. I mean, a fun-loving guy, brother. But he got called into the office one day. And they pulled out his stats. They said, I'm looking at this, and it says, you wrote one summons for the whole year. And you have no arrest. He said, how can you explain this? And he said, yep, that's about right. And the captain got so furious and said, get out of my office. You're a clown. Get out of my office. So, wow. Yeah, they may put those stipulations on you, but it's up to the individual officer to say, listen, you know, I'm going to do my job. But if it ain't right, it's just not right. I'm not doing that.
Right. I hear you.
I agree with that, brother.
Okay. All right, so I...
Has anyone seen the movie American Skin?
Yeah, I watched it.
It just came out.
Yeah, I plan to watch it this weekend.
Yeah, me too.
A lot of good jewels were dropped in that movie.
Absolutely. And I brought it up just because of how, again, pervasive the stop and frisk is. And it actually played right into what Chris was talking about. And the opposite of what Harbor was talking about, as it pertains to how it's actually used, the pressure that is on officers and things of that nature, and how that can impact the community and other people's lives as it pertains to what that is. And as I said before, when you have those roll calls, even though it may be a nicer neighborhood, they're still talking about those outside, you know, neighborhoods that are adjacent, the adjacent neighborhoods that are there. So if you're in this particular precinct and you may have a quote unquote good neighborhood, but they're talking about those adjacent ones. And so now you're still on the same lookout. So everyone's on the same height and level, and it creates a level of anxiety every time an officer goes out there, because now, you know, I heard these reports. I'm talking to the guys and gals that's on the force that's been there before, whatever the case may be. And these are things I need to prepare for. And so I need to look for this, what I need to do, whatever the case may be. And so now you're taking these things and you're creating a scenario in your mind that really doesn't even exist. And then now you have to be confronted with it. But anyways, that's a great movie for, I think, everybody should
watch. Okay. All right. Good.
And it's a great conversation piece that, Walt, that you were sitting there talking about as far as having in your family or before showing up to someone's funeral. That's the type of movie that needs to be seen, and then have a larger discussion, even to a particular point of even hosting a town hall based off of those movies, and bring legislators in, bring the police in, and bring community leaders in to be able to talk about the nuances within that movie and how that actually plays out into the neighborhood or communities that you're currently in right now, and what we can do in 2021 moving forward to create policies, legislation, and reform that meets the needs of the community.
Okay, I agree. But I mean, not necessarily with the legislation, because the legislation is the part that is, you know, if you look at a three-legged stool, with legislation being one of them, that's the one that's shorter than the other one. It's not affected, not as affected as it needs to be, or the intent was to even write it. So, you know, with legislation, then I'm a little hesitant to say that that's going to address the issues that we have with gun violence.
Terry versus Ohio is the reason why we have stop and frisk. So it began as a judicial case that became legislation. Okay. So it's a part of that conversation. That's the reason why even Terry versus Ohio happened when it did is as pervasive as it is today. And part of the reason why, even though we can't, I agree with you that, you know, as far as federal legislation, but you can even talk about state legislation that actually plays a part into it. And then you can get down to the ordinances and everything else. So whether you have a city council member, a state legislative individual, an actual congressional member, the police chief, and a civic leader. So you have those five individuals that being able to cover all the bases to be able to sit there and say, and then set the priorities for that particular community based upon that conversation. But anyways, at least if we can get beyond a conversation and get people involved around and centered around at least just one or two things that we can focus on. There's going to be many things that we want to be able to get accomplished. But let's get one or two things that are down there, prioritize it, and then see if the community can move forward.
And that addresses one of my questions, all right? And I'm saying, how can we move the needle? You know, we discussed this topic before, but how are we going to move the needle? And I think what you just said addresses that. But I do have a lack of faith in that to a certain extent. But I'm willing to anything that we think that we can do. We can get our legislators, our state legislators to do, our federal legislators, hold them to account. We have to hold them to account. But I agree with you if we can go that route. If that's part of the overall toolkit that we have to apply, yes. And who wanted to speak? I just heard someone.
I wanted to say, how do you legislate making having decent human beings? Part of the problem, so much is working against that, right? Social media has deteriorated the people's, we fight constantly on social media. It's nothing, you know, you're not on there just to have a good time or to see how people's families are doing. We arguing, we're fighting.
Yeah, drawdowns that hurt on social media.
It's a place where people can be radicalized. You know, we just not raising decent people. And I don't know if you can legislate that.
Okay.
No, you're right. You don't legislate that. But that's a perk.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's probably you have those civic leaders that are in there to be able to talk about, you know, what type of programs do we need to bring back to the communities? Again, that's why I mentioned about, you know, I spent some time in South Bronx and went to, and I had the Boys and Girls Club growing up on Ho Avenue. That was my spot, you know, where, you know, every summer, you know, we would spend time, you know, going there and be a part of the IG program and this program and that program and Taco Bell created the Supreme Teen Club that sponsored programs that sent us to the baseball games and soccer and just major league, you know, sporting events and stuff like that. And so, no, everything does not center around legislation, but it's so that we have these conversations. And so that way, one, legislators can sit there and say, OK, these particular areas need more funding. And so let's make sure that they get the funding that they need. The civic leaders can articulate the needs of what's in that community. City council could then sit there and create ordinances around it. There could be something where there is a monitor or a reformation of what stop and frisk is doing and the behaviors of certain police officers. And that's the reason why you have the police chief there. And then you can talk about how things may be overlapped and or additional support that may come from the federal level. But it puts everybody on an equal footing of contributing to being a part of the solution versus everyone pointing fingers at the other one saying, well, you're not doing enough and you're not doing enough. No, it's not. We're not doing enough. Here's what we all have identified and here's how we can help. And we're going to be a partner in this. And we don't have to always agree about it. But we're going to have this discussion and then we're going to make sure we work together to get it done and get it accomplished because we believe in something that's bigger than ourselves or whatever our personal feelings may be about something.
All right, Greg, I haven't heard from you. Do you have any What's your take on this?
Most definitely. I think, you know, aside from, you know, the political ways and the, you know, legislative ways we can get this done, you got to come at it from another direction also. And we got to take things back to grassroots efforts. You know, there's regardless of what you might see on the news and TV, I don't care what neighborhood it is, bad, there are positive men, strong black men in all of these communities that can put their hands to the plow. You can become involved with programs. You can start programs that start to change the narrative that these youngsters have.
Sure.
You know, like you said, you're a product of your environment. Well, we have to recreate that environment. One of the things that I was proud of when I was in New York, I coached football for how many years with the Brooklyn Skyhawks, and we are in the community. I mean, and we're seeing, you know, how many times did we go to practice and there's gun violence around us? There was still a galvanizing force in the community that do it this way as opposed to that way. And it helps. I mean, every little bit helps. And you have to multiply that. You got to multiply it. It's got to be not just football, basketball. It's not just sports. It can be young entrepreneurs programs. So many different things that people can do to retake control of their communities. And of course, I say the church becomes involved even more than they are. Regardless of what your religious outlook is, the church can and will be a galvanizing force in the community. They just can't be nullified. They can't continue to be nullified. You think about it. When we were growing up, Sister So-and-so would go upside your head if she caught you doing something wrong. And we had a respect for that. That respect doesn't exist anymore. But the common denominator was our values and our ideals were based on something biblical. And I say, you know, that's where we got to change the hearts of the people in our community. And to me, the best equipped people to change the hearts of the church.
I agree with that, Greg. Mm-hmm. Well, I got one problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
The church is part of the problem, too. All of the things that were our foundation,
mm-hmm.
and especially in our communities, have been destroyed, and they're not the same. You know, the church backed this horrible human being that was the president for the last 4 years. So it's something going on in our churches, in our homes, in our homes. We are not producing good human beings right now. We're not good to each other. We're not nice to each other. We don't talk to each other. We don't respect each other. And it's reflective in everything that we do in our church, when we go to church, when we work, when we come home, in our sports. You know, you go to the stadium, people are fighting, arguing. If I remember when Kaepernick was kneeling, you would have people in the stands yelling at other people because they didn't want to stand up for the national anthem. It's just, it's across all of the things that we do right now. We are not producing good human beings because every fabric of everything that we do. It's in the fabric of this nation right now. We are bitter. And also, I just want to add this real quick because we probably didn't get to it. You know, right now, who's turning in all of those people that were in the insurrection, that were part of that insurrection? You got their family members turning them in, their ex-wives, their wives, their co-workers. How come that's not happening in our community?
Well, you know, there's one word.
We don't have a...
I'm sorry, Chris. Go ahead, but I got a word.
Snitching.
Snitch.
Yeah, the snitching.
Snitch.
But it ain't snitching for the insurrectionists, right? We're happy that they're being told on right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're happy that that's happening. How come we're not happy that we're up? We should be angry that that's not happening in our community right now.
One significant difference, Chris, is that those people don't have to look over their shoulders. You snitch in the community, you got to look over your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
These are not the same, listen, Chris. Those people that ran into that building aren't nice people. The Boogaloo Boys, the Proud Boys, they're dangerous people. But they're still being turned in.
Yeah, they're dangerous people, but they're cowards too.
Pence needed to look over his shoulder.
They're cowards.
Pence needed to look over his shoulder. Look what he did to Pence. Okay, so it does happen to them, but on a different level.
My point is, they're being turned in.
But that's one thing.
They're helping. There are people out there helping law enforcement right now to get those people.
Okay.
That does not happen in our community.
Can I ask you this? I mean, what do you think about this? I did something similar with Baltimore, all right, before y'all guys came on board. And I was interviewing a person that was a homeowner in Baltimore, like close to 30 years. And she was thinking about moving into the county, Maryland, all right, from Baltimore due to all the shootings and this and that. But one day, she was telling me a teenager, whatever, 12 or 13, 14, just took her son's bike. Just took it. All right? She could not call the cops because of the fear that retribution would be directed at her and her family for being a snitch.
Wow.
Okay? So, I mean, let's open up the wound for what it is. She could not report a bike being taken from her child for fear of being a snitch.
But one of the things that I have a problem with, especially the thing that we have gotten away from is that words matter, and I think that we have to redefine or actually define and use a real definition. So snitches are individuals who are in concert, who have colluded or conspire to do something, and then they snitch on another person that they were involved with. When you report an incident, a theft, a crime, or whatever have you, and you are doing the duties of a citizen, that goes involved with, and I'm sure Harper would agree with this, would be what's called community policing. That's the relationship between the community and the police to being able to achieve justice. That's what, you know, Chris is and they're talking about. And that's one of the things that we should be able to do. Yes, to your point. Would retribution take place? Could a person,
right?
No. You're absolutely right, but that's the thing. Like, we have to be able. But see, that's the reason why that kid will grow up and he won't say nothing.
Because he watched his mother not do it. Number one, his mother's trying to protect him. Let's say the mother went to the cops and said, "No, this guy. She knows. She knows."
This is what I'm saying.
Said, "This guy stole my son's bike." The guy goes down, but his gang.
Right.
Will kill one of her kids.
No, but the thing is.
So what are you doing in a situation like that?
But children learn by example.
I know that, but you tell me the best way to approach that. Go to the cop.
The best way to approach it is that you do. So I have this term about being noble, doing the right things at the right time for the right reasons. Okay, and so the thing is that yes, in order for me to be able to show my child that this is the right thing to do and that you stick by your convictions is to be able to do that. Now, is there a safe way to do it? Can I do an anonymous tip? Can someone else say that they were, whatever the case may be, then yes.
Well, when they see the bike with the child that they stole it from, they're going to know that apparently someone told the cops.
You know what the issue is with that? The problem is with that, and I think Chris had made mention about it, that when you was in the church, that the lady, you know, if Miss Smith, whatever case it be, hit you upside the head, and you just took it on the chin, or if you was caught, like, matter of fact, I used to walk around in my neighborhood where my grandmother was at in New York, and if I couldn't walk down the street the wrong way without someone going back to telling my grandmother that I was around the corner or whatever the case may be.
Right.
I don't know who would have said that. Right. But here, but the issue is here is that because the entire community does not have the respect for itself, then you would be able to target one person. I could promise you, if I had a bike that was on that block and someone had said something, nobody would know exactly who it was because everybody on that block knew who I was. And so and they would have reported it, and they would have came back, and no one would have known the wiser as far as who made that report. But to your point, that's the reason why we have to be able as a community to be able to stand up there. So you can't sit there and say that, oh, this family told on them. You would have not known if it was the neighbor across the street, the neighbor down the street, the neighbor upstairs, the neighbor downstairs. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have known that. And in order to be able to get back to that, we have to be willing to stand up for what is right at all times and be consistent about it. Because that's what makes us hypocrites and contradicting of the things that we expect when we don't show the same behaviors.
Well, I can sit here and say I agree with you. But then again, I am not in that situation that this lady was. When she sees the kids shooting each other, because they carry deadly weapons. It's not like they're going to beat you up like when we were growing up. Okay,
that's true.
I mean, it's deadly. They're going to kill you.
That's true.
Okay? And they don't give a damn. They can kill you and then go to a McDonald's or go have a ice cream sundae.
Well,
that is what I'm talking about.
But not telling on him only helps him graduate to committing harsher crimes.
You empower that group.
Yes. I mean, if he thinks he can get away with taking a bike, he's going to elevate. Well, he's going to graduate to something else. It's got to end somewhere.
I understand, Chris. I mean, normally I would agree with y'all guys, but Baltimore is the second murder capital of the world in terms of number of people being killed. It is a bad place. This person been there 30 years as a homeowner, so she's seen the transition between good and bad.
So she basically trapped in her own house.
She's trapped, and she's got to move. She hasn't moved to the county. Okay, because they're taking
her. Back in the 50s and the 60s, you know, the Ku Klux Klan was terrorizing people, but they still had to make a stand.
They didn't come to my neighborhood. I'm in North Carolina. Wow. Ku Klux Klan came to my neighborhood. I didn't see him.
But my point is, at some point, people had to take a stand.
I agree with y'all.
You can't just keep. You can't let the lunatics take over the asylum.
Idealism is great, guys. Idealism, and that's what y'all guys. I mean, you speak in idealism. You know, this is the way it should be. You know, I'm the sheriff. I'm the guy with the. I'm the good guy. So good has to be cascaded down or across. All right, I understand what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying. 9 times out of 10, but we don't live in that type of environment. Some people don't live in that environment. I can say, okay, I look at my Ring doorbell and I look at a crime statistic. Last week we had one assault. Oh, okay. And what was that? Where was it? I can get a good idea where it was. Okay. I live in a neighborhood like that. So only thing I do when they do a chat and they say somebody got hurt gunshots, and somebody said, "Oh, those are firecrackers. You don't hear gunshots out here, okay?" And if there's a murder, it's coming from the black neighborhood. It must be over there by so and so, okay? So, and I see some nonsense on this chat for Ring doorbell. You know, Ring doorbell has that neighborhood watch thing where everybody reports what they see. I don't have it. So, what I'm trying to say is I can't tell that person that I interviewed, you go down because you have to set an example for your children. You go to the cop. You go down and you report it. I can't say that to her. I can't.
I don't know. Well, I lived in Brooklyn, and I'm not speaking from speaking about something that I didn't do myself. I lived in Brooklyn. We lived on a pretty decent block, but there was crime. But they knew that crime, take that down the block. You wasn't messing with the Sweeney house.
Yeah, because they knew the
Because
Sweeney.
We didn't stand for it. We didn't stand for it.
They knew the Sweeneys. All right? They knew better.
So, but it could be, but listen, I don't have anything more than that woman had. I didn't have a shield over my body. But I can't be afraid of where I'm living. That's the problem. We're afraid of where we're living, and we're afraid of our own children. That's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem.
It is a problem. I agree with you. All right, but it's just an situation. From what I can understand, and from our discussions with this lady from Baltimore, y'all. I don't know if y'all guys been to Baltimore, but
Yes.
All right. The go to some of the neighborhoods. I used to walk through where Johnny United used to play the stadium. I used to walk over there and play. Okay. So I knew where it came from, but to be the murder capital of the world, I mean, come on. I mean, I can appreciate what this lady is saying. And you know, I don't want to drum on it much longer, but I understand your guys' position. I agree with it. But everything is different. You know, it may not apply.
Well, right. Well, the thing is that by not standing up is how it gets to the level it gets to. When we start to concede what is right and start changing it for what's convenient, that's how we create our own atmospheres and environments. So to your point, yes, it is hard to advise somebody to then go against that. It was harder to not say something, for you to be the person who knew that something went wrong and you didn't say anything. That was frowned upon. Now it's to the opposite of that, the polar opposite of it, to where if you know something that you shouldn't say something, and that's the wrong way to do things. Yes, it's hard, but that's the reason why we have to be able to claim our own communities back. And that's one thing that cannot be legislated. That is one thing that cannot be enforced by the police chief, no matter how many stop and frisk or anything else. We have to do the hard work and the heart work in our own communities, and to sit there to eradicate those behaviors so that way it can be corrected. And that's the only way to be able to take back the communities, you know, if that's what people really want.
All right, I agree. Right. And I'm not agreeing necessarily now, but I understand your point. Art, are you there?
Yeah, old school.
Art.
Pop, you still there?
He may be on mute because he's still in the house. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I may be old school. I mean, we hear the same thing. But I don't want to dwell on this because I do want to move on a little bit, guys, to cover something. And it had to do with Harp. I think Harp, he's only good to like 6 o'clock and it's 7:12 now. All right. We talked about the term snitch. And used for people to cooperate with law enforcement. Now, as a result, there is a lack of cooperation from the community. Now let's say this. Okay, let's do a scenario. You're in Brownsville and you live in a building, okay? And someone gets shot in front of you, all right? A gun battle happens and someone gets shot in front of you. Okay, and cops come and you saw the person that did the shooting. I'm gonna direct this to Chris. Chris, are you gonna tell the cops who shot that person?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we got to change the terminology, what the word snitch means, first of all. People who go to the police to try to make their communities better are not snitches.
Well, I mean,
that's
yeah.
Part of the problem. They're being described, but we got to change, just like that messaging about stop and frisk and all of this stuff. Right. That messaging has to change because people identify that with something that's wrong. And it's not wrong to tell if you see one of your neighbors get killed.
Right.
Okay. All right. Now I'm going to go to
call me a snitch all day.
I want to go to Monique. Is Monique still here?
I'm still here.
What do you think about that? Would you tell somebody got shot in your building or something? And would you tell the cops who did it?
If my grandmother was alive and she shot somebody and she was wrong, I'd snitch on her too.
What I'm telling you. Am I from the moon?
Wrong is wrong. Because the same way that person shot somebody in front of me, they could shoot me.
Yeah, that's
or my loved one. And I would expect somebody to say something so that I could achieve justice. So yes, it's not snitching. Yes, I would tell. I'm doing my civic duty. Okay. Yes, I would tell.
Right.
And if that's I have right. to that's and if right. I have to leave my home for a while to be safe, going to witness protection, whatever I have to do to achieve that justice, yes, I would tell.
All due respect to you. Right. That's great.
Stand up, girl. That's right.
That is fantastic.
That's right.
Let me go.
Hey, well, yeah.
And Walt, this is great. I'm gonna tell you I'm gonna give you the same answer. I absolutely would and had the experience. And as a matter of fact, he's not on here now. It was Steve and I together. We were 16. This was in Laurelton, Queens, 235th Street and 121st Avenue. We were walking to the park to play basketball and saw one of our friends get shot and killed a block away. And yes, we both testified.
That's like, right.
Look, that's a violation of the neighborhood. That's an absolute violation of the neighborhood.
They were part of the neighborhood.
We weren't gangsters.
Suppose they were part of the neighborhood. There was a gang that ran the drugs in the neighborhood.
Come on. Now, to me, there's no other way. This is a dude that we played with. Somebody we hung out with. There's no way.
I'm proud that we were able to disseminate this type of information of what you should do. And guys, yes, you should tell. I mean, snitch was just a word that was distorted and used for, you know, I'm in the gang and, you know, I'm selling this and that and this and that. They just adopted that word and they changed the meaning of it. Okay. So I have to agree with the panel that y'all guys got to stand up and tell it like it is, even though you got to go to court and it may be a little risky. You got to tell, you know, tell it. The cops pull over and say, okay, blah, blah, blah. You know, this person got shot. What do you see? Who saw something?
You shouldn't have to live in fear in your own home.
Oh, no. I'll tell him.
You should not be afraid to speak.
I was telling my son the other day, and, you know, he bought a house a few years back, my younger son. I said, look, you know, he was concerned about the, you know, what happened with the Capitol and this and that. I said, look, you do not allow anybody, if they come on your property, you got every right to kill them. You don't have to go looking for them, but if they come on your property, that is your land. As a man, you're going to defend your land, okay? The same way I defend my land, okay? And the same way my daughter's going to defend her land, all right? Okay, mm-hmm. So don't get me wrong, all right? Okay, mm-hmm. So don't get me wrong. I'm like Ben Cartwright. If you ever guys ever watched Bonanza, I'm like Ben Cartwright. Okay. All right.
No, I'm
the wrong way. And then we got a deal. You know what I'm saying? So but that was great. That was great for the audience. I mean, hopefully the audience will adopt that, start cooperating when they see someone, you know, get hurt or killed. And that's the only way we're gonna stop some of this thing and reduce it.
Pop, do you have any final words you wanna
say? A parent, we have about 20 families. It's a parent and either one child or two, you know, depending on the age of the two children, they will work remotely for PC Richards. And after the pandemic is over, PC Richards is going to select, out of the 20 families we have, they're going to select 10 to give them permanent jobs. We're doing that in 2 weeks. But right now, what I've been doing since this past summer, and I've been doing it ever since then, every week, twice a week, we teach young people financial management. We teach them coding, and we pay them $15 an hour to get on the computer twice a week to work with us. So we feel like putting money in these young people's pockets and giving them something productive to do is going to keep them off the streets.
That's right.
Right now, I got 130 young people that we employ through the Police Foundation, and we're looking to continue doing this type of work.
That's amazing work. Great. Yeah.
Salute, brother. That's excellent stuff right here.
Can I get a job?
So, if you want to know more about it, I know Michelle, she puts the link up. If you want to know more about it, options.nyc, that's the website. And on Instagram, at options.nyc, you can see some of the stuff that we've been doing, what we've done in the past, and what we're currently doing.
Yeah, very proud of you, Harp. Very proud of what you're doing, man.
Yes. Excellent. It's amazing, Harp.
Excellent. Okay, so we're pushing up against the clock. It's about that time. And I'm going to, and I really appreciate the panel. And we had some nice discussions today. Me against Ernest. See who else? Monique against nobody but me. Everybody is against me.
Everybody's against you, man. We stand up people, buddy.
Right. Yeah. I'm proud of y'all young folks.
Yeah,
I mean, y'all gonna hear it all. I'm telling you.
We got your back. I know that.
Ride it,
that's why I'm proud of y'all guys. You know, you're the younger generation. So I'm proud of the
family. I haven't been called young in a long time. Ooh, I like
you're
that.
Younger than me, I can tell you that. So you're young.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I may be younger than you, but I'm 60. I ain't that young.
You're young. You're strong. I can tell.
Young at heart.
Doesn't matter. But anyway,
age ain't nothing.
I am so happy that y'all guys join us today. This is very lively. And I'm going to turn it over to Michelle because we're pushing up against that clock that time. Hopefully, I'll see y'all guys next week. All right? You can make
yes,
it back.
Yes.
The panel is an integral part of the Walt Weekly. Y'all guys mean a lot to us. All right. So anyway, we'll turn it over to Michelle. Yes.
Right. Thank you, Walter. Thanks, everyone, for joining our weekly podcast, our live show.
You're
welcome. Thanks to our audience. Yeah, the panel was amazing. Monique, Greg, Chris, Ernest, Harper, thank you for rejoining us. We miss you on the show. Our Friday Live was sponsored by Beauty Blends by Ami, Michelle Sweeney Hair, and Soap and Love. Check them out. I posted everything in the chat room. You can find us at www.thewaltweekly.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook, The Walt Weekly, Twitter, Walt Weekly. We are on iTunes Podcast, iHeartRadio, and now Pandora and other streaming platforms. Have an awesome weekend, everyone. Be safe and blessed.
And can I add one more thing before y'all guys go? All right, please follow, share, and like. Okay, and this episode will be sent out to the platforms on Sunday after 3 p.m. So let your friends know about it so they can listen to how good y'all guys really are. Okay?
And we have one more announcement I forgot, forgot. We have a contest that will start for February 1st. We are giving $100 cash prize to our contest winner. Details will be available on the 29th of February.
Excellent. All right. Great, guys. Thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. Love all y'all guys.
Have a good one, everybody.